Back in my younger and less creaky days, I used to run a little bit. I was never very good at it, but I frequently went over to Parham Bridges and ran on the track there, the little walking trail. And there was a young man there one morning who was one of those people, if you're a runner, you'd love to hate. He was slim and tall, and he ran with this easy gait, and he was fast, and he looked like he could just run all day. And at one point, I saw him go back to a part of the track and stop and sit down along the side of the track with a little boy who turned out to be his brother. His brother didn't have the gifts of the older brother. And so this guy, who could run as fast as he wanted and probably as long as he wanted, stopped and went back and sat with his brother. It really got to me that he would go back and, you know, he could be out there continuing to impress all the rest of us. And instead, he chose to do something that was very humble and loving and compassionate. True love for another person, true compassion, comes to light when one person will sacrifice simply to be with another person. In our religious tradition, in our story, it feels to me as if Jesus chose to come back for us, to give up his invulnerability to suffering and death, and to come back simply to be with us. Some days we sit by the road in despair or fear or shame. We sit by the road unable to go on. And yet Jesus comes back to be with us. Not because God needs it, but because we need to know that we've not been abandoned. The readings today, the first Sunday after the Epiphany, talk about the baptism of Jesus. And in all of the books of commentary that you read about these passages about this baptism, all of the commentaries ask why Jesus would need or choose to be baptized. Of course, they focus on Jesus being without sin, and if he's without sin and perfect, why should he be baptized? I think it is so that it can be clear to us that God is with us. The Eucharistic prayer we use, A, says that God sent Jesus to live and die as one of us. Those are very pretty words, but what do they really mean? They mean that the runner on the path, like the runner on the path, Jesus could have remained distant, but instead he chooses to go through things that we go through, staying with us, no matter how badly we have failed. For Jesus to live and die as one of us means that he went through, as a human being, the things that we do. He was baptized. He was tempted. He resisted and feared death, as when he said, "Let this cup pass from me." He died as all of us die. And I see his baptism and his resurrection as the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end of human life, shown in the beginning and the end of Jesus' life. One reason Jesus comes back for us, I think, is to teach us how to live out God's will in human life. For us to learn all that we can learn from Jesus, though, for us to have hope in our own human condition and its sorrows, we need to remember continually that Jesus lived and died as one of us. We cannot live perfectly. We cannot love perfectly. But we must endure this world, which can be painful, this place so often filled with fear and suffering and illness and loss and death. And Jesus is here with us through it all. God could have sent Jesus in a human form, but without the vulnerability to human pain and suffering. And if you read about the early church, you will find that many of the most resistant heretics
not truly human, who looked human but didn't suffer as we do. And those ideas were heretical because they implied that Jesus didn't live and die as one of us. Now, we might be inclined to say that Jesus suffered as a human being so that God would understand what human suffering is about. The truth is that God does understand, but the sending of Jesus, who lived and died as one of us, allows us to know and to see and to believe that God does understand. To know and to see and to believe that we have not been left alone sitting on the side of the road. Jesus has come back for us to live and die as one of us. It makes me ask, what can we learn from him that he chooses to sit here with us? We get some direction and some instruction in the prophecies of Isaiah that we heard today. They are often called the suffering servant passages, and they were later used, as our little opening said, to gesture towards Jesus. But they gesture towards Jesus not only as Savior, but also as our model. Isaiah's words about the suffering servant say, "He will not cry or lift up his voice or make a burning street. A bruised reed he will not break, and a dimly burning wick he will not quench. He will faithfully bring forth justice." We think about those words in relation to Jesus, in reference to Jesus, that tells us that we can learn not how to suffer, but how to seek God despite or even within our suffering. We can learn how to avoid hurting others just because we hurt. We can learn how to have courage to speak up when we witness injustice. God didn't need Jesus to become human, to live and die as one of us. We needed it. We needed a model for living God's will in human flesh. And even more important, we needed to know that we are beloved. We needed to know that we need not and cannot be perfect, but that God takes care of that for us. We need to know that no matter how much we struggle with this human life, no matter how abjectly we fail to complete the race, we will not be sitting there alone. Like a loving and humble man come to comfort and encourage his little brother, Jesus will come back for us. And Jesus will sit with us by the side of the road so that no matter how sinful or despairing we may feel, we will not be alone. If need be, Jesus will sit right there beside the road with us always. Came to live and die.